This is Ramana. I think that, you know, the issue of inter-rater reliability is important in general, but I think we have to also, I'm going to take a kind of a different take on this within the context of kind of who responded to this particular survey. I agree that the response rate is very low, and that's a concern. But that said, even if you had a great response rate, the variation in the size of the organization, so the larger the organization, you know, that's where the concern around inter-rater reliability will become most dominant. With the smaller organizations, and it looks like, you know, your response rate was dominated by FQHCs, and I don't know, you know, FQHCs vary in size, but the smaller the organization, the less of an issue it is for the inter-rater reliability within that organization. Now, across the organization, that's a different, you know, that's a different question, but I don't know that that's relevant. I mean, what we're, you know, trying to get at is kind of organizational cultural competence here. So I just kind of want to throw that out there, that the smaller the organization, to a certain extent, you know, depending on who answered for the organization, the likelihood of that another person answering for that same organization will likely have similar responses. That will vary more in larger organizations. You know, we definitely, when I was back in the day, when I was still at the hospital, American Hospital Association, and at HRET, we definitely sent a lot of surveys out into the field to hospitals. And it was always an issue about who responded to the survey in the hospital. Even if it was targeted to the CEO, it was rare that the CEO would respond. It would often be a variety of, you know, mid-level managers, with the assumption that the person who was responding would respond to the best of his or her knowledge, and if they didn't have the information, they would seek it out from others in the larger organization. So I think this is an issue. I think the response rate is a bigger issue than the inter-rater reliability because of the variation in the types of organizations that you're seeking information from.
And this is Beverly again. I think, you know, looking at inter-rater reliability and also doing additional validity testing is something that we are going to actively pursue going forward.
So, in other words, right now you can't tell us if there are systematic differences in response to this survey based on who at an organization responded to it. Is that what you're saying?
We were not able to look at that exactly.
Thank you.
As part of the cognitive testing, we did collect information not only on how responding organizations understood a particular survey item, but also collected information on the context or the information that they drew on to answer that item. So, for example, if we were asking about training, we asked them to talk to us, you know, extensively about the type of training that they offer at their organization. If we were asking about interpreter services, we followed up with probes to try to understand what exactly they do in terms of interpreter services, how they communicate to their patients that interpreter services are available.
And Beverly, are you able to share a little bit of what your plans are in terms of inter-rater reliability and validity testing?
Well, I think going forward, again, we hope to be able to obtain additional funding to field the survey with a larger sample, particularly including larger organizations like hospitals. And specifically asking whether we might be able to test the survey with more than one individual within the organization to then be able to compare responses and ensure that the responses not only are valid but also reliable across respondents. So we haven't obtained funding yet. This is still in the works, but it's one of the things that we plan on doing going forward.
Are there other questions regarding the scientific acceptability here. So let's move on to the usability question, and here again it was split two members rated it at high, six medium, one low, and two insufficient. Some of the comments included not ready for public reporting, not clear whether scores would prompt action, need better data on sampling administration, minimum response burden. The 4A adoption framework is full for focusing QI activities of healthcare organizations. The only information regarding meaningful interpretation are, one, there is a theoretical framework underlying its construction, and their expert panel seemed to like it. There's no data showing it's been used by anyone to produce meaningful quality improvements in any organization.
And if I could address that last comment, it is true, I mean, but this is a survey that was just only recently, developed and made publicly available. And so, you know, it is kind of hot off the presses, as it were. Other than this first field test, to my knowledge, and I don't know, probably to NQF's knowledge, no one else has used the survey as of yet.
Comments from the committee on the usability questions.
It's really hard. I mean, it's hard to assess usability for something that hasn't really been used very much, you know?
This is Liz. One comment I have about that is, given that it's so variable in who actually responded and actually gave the answers, that raises a question in my own mind about usability, that if you can't actually identify who would complete it necessarily in a way, it would be hard for organizations to, on some level it may reflect that it's hard for them to actually complete the survey.
Could you repeat that last part again, Liz?
I was just saying that, you know, I wonder if this reflects some issue around feasibility and usability, if, like, you couldn't, it's not clear exactly who would be the person to fill it out, and so different people are filling it out at different institutions. And I understand there's some size issues, and Ramana can, I know, made a good comment about that, how people get this information, but it just raises that question in my own mind.
This is Robin. I just want to clarify something. Usability, the criteria, is meaningful and understandable to the intended audience. Feasibility goes to the issue, I think, that you're addressing, Liz.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I just want people to be clear about what we're talking about here.
And it sounds like the usability was largely addressed through the cognitive interviewing. That was the approach, Beverly?
Through the cognitive interviewing, and we also did follow-up interviews with a small sample of organizations that actually completed the survey to collect additional information on, you know, their experience in completing it, how much of a burden it was, whether they experienced any issues, you know, how many people they had to consult within the organization in order to complete it, et cetera. Overwhelmingly, among the organizations that completed the survey and provided comments, they were also able to provide kind of open-ended comments at the end of each section of the survey and then at the very end, as well as the feedback that we obtained through the cognitive interviews and these post-survey interviews is that The survey was easy to understand and complete. It is a little long, but it's a web-based survey that is easy to complete. They get their survey score at the end of the survey, so they like that part. The information that we got is, other than, you know, the length, which for some organizations was a bit long, and, you know, for the larger organizations, the fact that at times they had to consult with different departments, that the survey was easy to understand and to complete.
And remind us again of what the estimated time was. What was that? How did that come out to?
It really ranged from 15 minutes to a maximum of 180 minutes. And I think the average time was close to an hour to complete.
So this is really a nice segue into the feasibility issue. Again, the responses were similarly distributed, most clustering in the middle there. Do you have any information on the non-responders and why the response rate was so low? Was this due to lack of engagement of the CEO, or did you get high rates of CEOs agreeing to do it and then the organizations did not in turn submit a response? Can you perhaps shed some light on that piece?
We did follow up with non-respondents and collect information on reasons for non-participation, and it varied. One of the things there were several issues that affected the response rate. The first was the timing of the survey, and unfortunately, you know, we had a specific window during which we could field the survey, and it conflicted with other surveys that were going into the field at the same time, particularly. Here in California, we approached the Primary Care Association, and they reported to us that they had just finished a survey and were about to start another one. We did hear from a lot of organizations that they are over-surveyed and understaffed, and you know, that also they were very interested in the survey and interested in the content of the survey and thought that it might be useful, that they just didn't have the resources. And that for some organizations, unless they see a real compelling reason to participate or are mandated to complete the survey, then they just don't do it. So that was, you know, that was some of the responses that we got. In other organizations, we did find that the survey was sitting in the CEO's inbox, as it were. So they received the information, and they just had not designated someone to complete it. So it kind of stalled there. Not so much that they were not interested in participating. They're just incredibly busy, and we had a fairly short turnaround time for completing the survey. So one of the recommendations that we have going forward is to extend the field period to allow, you know, CEOs to review the survey, designate someone, and then follow through. In other organizations, again, I think it was Grace Ting, I think you mentioned that for larger organizations, they have to get different levels of approval to submit that information, and then the requirement to attest to the accuracy of the information was possibly a holdup. So it was a mix of reasons, and we have recommendations going forward. I mean, I think one of the things that would go a long way to increasing a response rate to a survey like that is to carefully look at the timing and then to seek the endorsement from different organizations, so primary care organizations or the American Hospital Association or, you know, the American Health Plans Organization. And we did approach some of these organizations, and they're both very interested in the survey and would be willing to help promote it going forward.
Well, that's helpful. Other questions on the feasibility before we go on to the next topic of related competing measures? Well, thank you, Beverly. This has been very helpful.
Okay.
Nicole, do you want to introduce the related competing measures for the committee's consideration?
Sure. So, going through the related measures, and we're basing this discussion under the assumption that this cultural competency implementation measure will be moving forward. So think of it in that light. But there were two measures that the committee had recommended previously for endorsement that sort of address or have a similar measure focused around cultural competency, and that is the CAPS item set for cultural competence, as well as the cross-cultural domain of the CCAT, which is that communication assessment toolkit submitted by the AMA. So this first slide, again, just highlights that these measures have the same measure focus. Much of the similarities between these measures were specifically between the cultural competency implementation measure and the cross-cultural measure. So some of the questions listed out within the specifications of those two measures address similar concepts. The other piece to that is that while the measures may be related in focus, they, again, don't all target the same population. So remembering that CAPS is more focused towards questions for the patient, the CCAT looks at questions for patients and staff, or hospital staff, and then the cultural competency implementation measure focuses on addressing more towards the senior level staff at hospitals, health plans, community clinics, and dialysis organizations. So we wanted to bring that to your attention. The next few slides, or the next two slides I have here, are just some of the questions. Again, these are only between the CCAT and this cultural competency measure here, the implementation measure, the question comparison here. And looking at your screen, you'll see some of the questions we kind of pulled out. The first one just looks at whether the organization has an action plan or has made the environment welcoming for patients, diverse populations or patients. The second question looks at training. So, for example, the question asks if their staff have received specific or adequate training to address diverse or cultural backgrounds for patients. And then the last question looks at whether the patients have received materials that ask questions around their healthcare values or their beliefs or their cultural beliefs or their needs. So the next slide also has some questions. Again, conceptually, these questions are similar, but they're not identical. So I won't, you know, we're kind of short on time, and I won't go through the details of all of the questions, but we did want to get feedback from the committee first on whether you agree that the measures have a similar focus, and if they do, if you feel that the cultural competency implementation measure should still remain as a recommendation for endorsement along with the other two that you've previously recommended.
This is, Rob, this is a hypothetical argument in terms of the RAND measure because you have to vote on that, but because we have you together, we're asking for that. So assume that it's advancing and then comment based on that.
So this is Grace Ting from WellPoint, and I have to say that I definitely see similarities, but I would also very strongly advocate that the CCIM should be included for precisely the target audience reasons. I mean, one of the reasons that at the in-person meeting I endorsed the CCAT and the CAPS one, those two measures, were because there was an absence of measures that really reflected other care settings, you know, outside of ambulatory and inpatient hospital setting. And so those measurements, I'm like, yes, I know it focused on the hospital, but I guess it could work for a virtual health plan. Or so in the absence of nothing, I voted for them. But I have to say that the RAND tested, you know, CCIM does take a more global language, and so it would be a lot easier to adapt and sell to a non-caregiving, you know, point of care, basically, setting. So I would still vote for endorsement.
Any other comments from the group on that?
This is Donna Washington. I just have a question to clarify. I agree that probably the most relevant point here is that all three measures have somewhat different audiences. So I think that that's a strong consideration. But the question has to do with then what is the burden on the healthcare organization? Does that mean that in the theoretical case that all three measures are endorsed, would the expectation be that they would then field all three measures?
And I would like to know, too, this is Grace. That's a good point.
Did Nicole or Robin want to respond to that?
I mean, all of these right now are optional, you know, add-ons. So it really would be up to the implementing organization as to which they, you know, would like to add on to. It's not like these are mandatory and someone is saying that you have to use them.
But it would be conceivable that organizations would receive responses to reply to all three of these. Is that true?
Well, if a purchaser in your community, if you had three purchasers in your community, let's say, and they wanted to assess cultural competency of your organization, that it is conceivable that they could each choose a different one. From a national perspective, I have a hard time believing that, you know, CMS is ultimately going to choose all three. I mean, let's say, you know, 5 years down the road, it would seem to me if CMS, and it's obviously a hypothetical, wanted to assess this, they would probably pick one.
I think that if a final NQF, you know, endorsement document, there is a paragraph, you know, saying that we recognize some of these measures may be overlapping and that the organizations adapting the measures should review and implement what makes sense to them, I think that would be okay.
Yeah, I mean, we could obviously do that. The other thing, this is not uncommon in a new measurement field. And this is measuring cultural competency is frankly at the cutting edge of measurement right now. So it is not uncommon, you know, back in the day when I was in the first days of NQF to have competing, you know, beta blocker use after AMI measures because they were based on different sources, et cetera. So, and it's, you know, evolved towards a much tighter set of measures.
I'd like to take a moment to say thank you for your business.
I'm not troubled so much that there be multiple ones because the implementing organizations tend to use what's best for them and then the field evolves towards a standard.
So is there a general consensus amongst the group that
you would be okay with moving forward with all three? Or is there anyone who, I guess, opposed to that? Or
I think the question is, assuming that there are going to be multiple measures, related measures, and we know that there's at least two, and then there may be three, depending on the outcome with the RAND measure. Is there a sense from the group that, given the different populations and the slightly different questions, that at this time there's no need to choose one measure from amongst them?
Or again, putting it in any other direction, are there members who think that that all three of these measures should not proceed forward at this point?
But we already voted on the other two, correct?
That's right.
And, you know, and I think that the reason the other two passed and the reason that perhaps their scientific acceptability were higher was because of that narrower target audience for administering the survey, right? So, you know, I don't want this particular measure to be deemed for this, what is the field testing problem, where the organization skewed one, you know, towards smaller federally qualified health centers and you know, felt that the sample size was low. Actually, for a survey, 18% response rate is actually not bad at all. You know, and I think that the reason that it's what it is, very, you know, spread out, smaller sample sizes, because it tried to be more inclusive, and I think that there's a role for that, because I know that I can sit there and extrapolate and say, oh, yeah, the other measures will work for me, but then I would have to adapt, and then you're toying with the instrument, and that's not so good either. But if there is an instrument, maybe a little bit less tested and maybe less scientifically valid, but I don't have to adapt and it's indoors, I would just go with that. And it's an easier sell for me internally, if it were, and I think to other non-points of care organizations to adapt this particular measure.
I mean, that sounds like an argument against this, really, to me. I mean, if you have something that's not perhaps scientifically valid but is you know, attractive on some face level, that's going to attract attention to this, it seems to me something that we should be very, very much more cautious about.
Well, okay, so I always approach this from a very practical, you know, sort of corporate perspective, right? And the downside of having, let's say, these very scientifically tested but not as widely applicable measure like the other two that were tested in care setting is that when I take these measures to the other approved measures to the manager, and they'll look at it and say, but yeah, but that's geared towards hospitals and medical centers. We're not going to do that. And then what's going to happen is that we will not implement anything, right? Whereas if that there is this, it's not that this isn't tested. I actually think that for what it is, for a survey with a broader audience, the scientific acceptability is good. So that's a different stance. It, you know, it's not as academically rigorous or clean as the other two, true. But then you have to look at it's trying to be more inclusive, so of course it's going to be fuzzier. But for what it is, it's actually good for what it is. I can take this and say, look, this applies to us, and leadership likely will say, you know, you're right, okay, we'll implement. So it's just, you know, if you have something that doesn't quite fit, then it's easier for leadership, who's, again, bombarded by all sorts of, you know, requirements. They'll just say it doesn't apply for us, you know, to us, therefore we won't do it, and then therefore you won't get the measurement and you won't advance.
Keep in mind, this is not a vote on this measure. The question is there so much duplication here that this measure should not be pushed forward at this point? We're not voting on the measure, and the other two have been endorsed. So the question really is overlap here.
I mean, I guess I would say I don't think that the overlap is clear and obvious enough that it should be disqualified on that basis.
And this is Nicole. Since we're kind of nearing to the top of the hour. I think what the best approach is, once we get the final vote on the RAND measure, we'll be able to obviously assess this discussion we've had around the related concepts a little bit better. But for now, I think the conversation and the points that the committee has raised will suffice for us to move forward.
Nicole, would you mind commenting on the voting process if there is to be one to the work group or committee?
Yes. I mentioned that at the beginning, and that will lead us to the last slide is on the next steps and timeline. But so what will happen is immediately following the call is I will circulate an email that has a link in it to access an online tool, which is where you'll be doing your voting. So again, the voting will be on the criteria that we discussed during the call. So looking at importance, specifically impact, performance gap evidence, under the scientific acceptability of the measure properties, you're going to be expected to vote on the reliability and validity, and usability, feasibility, and then finally, your overall recommendation for endorsement. There's also a section to provide verbiage around a rationale for your ratings that you've included. Once we have those results in, we'll be able to, tell the committee definitely if this measure will be moving forward. We're asking for the turnaround time on those, on your votes pretty quickly. We're asking to receive those votes by Wednesday, March 21st. We will be sending a summary from this conference call on Monday to the group if you'd like to wait till you get the summary. But while it's fresh in your mind, I did want to circulate the link to allow folks who participated on the call to vote immediately if they wanted to do that. And then, our timeline moving forward, we're going out for public and member comment in April. So another thing to keep an eye out for is the draft report, which we'll be circulating to the group next week to get your feedback and comments on that as well before we move forward with the rest of the consensus process. Operator, this is Nicole. We've kind of ran out of time a little bit, but can you just tell me if we had anyone from the public dial in on the line?
Let me check here one moment. It doesn't appear we've had anyone from the public dial in, though.
Okay. Are there any more questions from the committee about the process going forward or voting or? All right. Well, thank you, Kevin, for leading the discussion. Beverly, we appreciate your participation on the call as well as and the committee members. So you'll be getting an email from me in just a second for the voting, and we'll be in touch on next steps. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.